Hello! Welcome to the Rotten Horror Picture Show, the horror movie podcast where we're talking about films off the Rotten Tomatoes 200 Best Horror Movies of All Time list. My name is Clay. With me, as always, is Amanda. How are you doing, Amanda?
Good. I'm here and I'm programmed with self-destruction.
Am I, Clay? I don't even know anymore. Now that I have this tattoo. We are talking today about Alex Garland's follow-up to Ex Machina, his directorial debut. Alex Garland, I feel like he's, for my money, he's probably got one of the best batting averages overall, which is easy to do if you don't make that many things.
He's made a good amount of things now,
That's
though.
True. I guess he's been around for a while. So he's kind of came on the scene as the screenwriter for 28 Days Later.
Yes.
And I believe he also did The Beach. I think
he
wrote
that.
So. Have you ever seen The Beach?
No.
No?
No.
I know. I always avoided it, but I've been curious to check it out because I do like Alex Garland stuff quite a bit.
Same.
Then he made his directorial debut with Ex Machina.
Which I fucking love.
And this is the follow-up to that, which is called Annihilation from 2018. It is number 135 on our list. It has an 88% Rotten Tomatoes score and a 67% audience score. I was going to ask you if you'd seen it before, but you are currently holding the book in my face.
Yes.
In very aggressive manner.
Yes.
So I'm going to say,
read this book.
Read this book, Annihilation by Jeff Vandermeer. What's your history with I guess Annihilation?
With the concept?
The concept.
Or the artistic element?
Any and all.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, we'll narrow it down to the book and the movie. This is one of those books that I just sort of, I don't know, I picked up the book.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I was just sort of like, you're browsing, you want to read something.
Didn't know anything about it.
Did not know anything about it. Didn't know anything about the author.
Mm-hmm.
I became immediately obsessed with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple years later, found out a movie was going to be made and it was going to be directed by Alex Garland. And I promptly lost my shit.
Ain't that always the way?
If only, right? Mm. Like, if only the books you loved were taken up by talented directors to become movies, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of the ideal.
Yeah.
Like, say what you will, I know people have mixed feelings about this movie. I really enjoy this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think many other directors could have even approached the source material and made it into a movie, so I'm all for it.
He does, I do think, rightly so, Ex Machina gave him a lot of cred, because that movie is pretty incredible.
Yes.
And it does sort of show that he can dance in many different colored lights.
Yes.
Much like they do in Ex Machina.
Yes.
He also wrote the Carl Urban Dread movie, which is pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen that, highly recommend.
I really like that movie.
I had seen this in the theater. I don't think I have seen it since. However, and this is not something that either Wes or I have interrogated, but maybe someone who has a working knowledge of this podcast's production company's works.
Oh, boy.
So Wes usually rents the movie on our shared Penske file Prime thing.
Mm-hmm.
When I asked him to do that, the movie had already been purchased at a previous date.
Interesting.
And he didn't remember doing it, and I didn't do it.
Oh.
And so I don't know if we have actually covered this movie before. It's very possible, because there have been movies that I'm like, oh, I can't believe it. Nope. We did that about 6 years ago. So there might be a Patreon episode somewhere in there where we covered Annihilation, and I do not remember a single
Fun.
Bit of it, if that is the case.
Very appropriate to this movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is all the more reason why you should head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile, where you can dig up this possible episode of Annihilation that Wes and I did, or you can follow Amanda and I as we cover reboots and remakes this year.
Yeah.
What is this, July? July, we are doing Fright Night.
Yes.
Fright Night.
Perfect. Yeah.
Which is going to be a lot of fun. But
yeah, go back and find the content that original Wes and original Clay did before their Shimmer-produced doppelgangers emerged and took over.
You know, not to get weird and deep here.
He just opened up a flap of skin in his abdomen. So, be grateful this isn't a visual medium.
Listen, A, there's plenty to do that with. Trust me. And B, be happy that was all that I opened, because otherwise this would be bad. It's better for our working relationship that I tore my stomach open instead of anything else.
Yeah.
I've always been fascinated by the idea that, what is it that they say? Every 10 years, your whole entire body basically is like this. The oldest cell in your body is only like 10 years old after it's like everything gets replaced.
Yeah.
So after 10 years, you are literally not the person that you were 10 years before that.
Yeah, we're all just meat sack versions of the ship of Theseus.
Yeah. And it's such a fascinating concept. Because, you know, as you get into, like, sci-fi stuff, like, one of the things I've always been interested in is that the idea of, like, uploading your consciousness and this. And people are always like, oh, man, I can't wait till I do that. And I'm always thought, like, I don't think that's going to work the way you think it will.
Right.
Because it's like, imagine you have a CD, and the CD is your brain.
Yeah.
And then you, this is only going to make sense to people who are, like, 15 years younger than me. Or me... 40 or 40 plus.
No, you were probably right the first time.
And then you rip the CD to your computer, right? And so you've got the files from the CD on your computer, but you've also got the CD.
Right.
Yeah, it exists on the computer, but you still have the CD.
Yes.
And if you break the CD,
you have destroyed it.
The CD no longer exists.
Yes.
So I don't think that necessarily uploading your brain into the cloud is going to make you live on the way people think that they do.
Yes.
And that's always creeped me out quite a bit.
Yeah. The did you see the movie Mickey 17?
I did, yes.
Yeah, it's kind of that, where he keeps getting essentially 3D printed after each death.
Yeah.
And while they have these sort of backup uploads of his consciousness, they can fake a sense of continuity for him, which is then ruined when one of the Mickey copies doesn't die, and then there's two of them, and they have to both be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Yes.
It, I remember the thing that handled this concept in the most devastating way is, that episode of Black Mirror with Hayley Atwell in it, where her husband dies and she gets the robot.
I think I gave up on Black Mirror before this episode.
Oh man, it's real good.
I remember the general discourse about it, though.
It's really good. Yeah. And like it kind of gets to the heart of the matter of that kind of stuff, where it's like you're not doing it for the person who's dead. You're doing it for yourself, because you can't let go of the person. But highly recommend. Anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw this once in the theater. I don't remember seeing it since then. There are very clear images that I did remember, though, because this movie has a lot of really great images in it. So I was excited to go back and watch it again, possibly for the second time, possibly for the third time. We're going to play the trailer for you, take a quick break, and then we're going to talk about it.
Its form?
No.
Was it carbon-based?
I don't know.
Did it communicate with you?
It reacted to me.
You really have no idea what it was.
Did your husband contact you at any point while he was away?
No.
It was his decision to go in.
Why did my husband volunteer for a suicide mission? You have to tell me where he was, what he was doing.
Do
Okay. Annihilation, directed by Alex Garland, written by Alex Garland, based on the first book of the Southern Reach trilogy by Jeff Vandermeer, starring Jane Foster, Valkyrie, Apocalypse, Wong, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Gina Rodriguez, Tuva Novotny, Sonoya Mizuno, and the self-destruction coded into each cell of our being. Amanda.
Yes.
What happens in Annihilation? Also, isn't it sad that of all those Marvel Comics characters that I listed off, Oscar Isaacs has to be Apocalypse?
Yeah.
Did you see that movie?
No.
Oh.
And I love him, so it's like a very pointed omission.
There is.
I've not watched that movie for a reason.
It's real bad.
Yeah.
But there is one part that is so ridiculous and campy that I almost have to recommend you watch this one section.
Okay.
Which is after Apocalypse gathers his four horsemen.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene where basically he gathers them in, then they all hang out in like an old factory building, and he gives them all goth makeovers while they listen to Metallica.
I mean, fucking sign me up.
Yeah.
Sign me up for Oscar Isaac giving me a goth makeover while we hang out in a warehouse and listen to Metallica.
Yeah.
Sounds like a great Friday night.
It's well worth the 2 minutes of the movie to watch.
Yeah.
The rest of it, not so much.
Okay. Well, I will now tell you what happens in this movie.
Please.
Lena, a biologist and former soldier, joins a mission to uncover what happened to her husband inside Area X, a sinister and mysterious phenomenon that is expanding across the American coastline. Once inside, the expedition discovers a world of mutated landscapes and creatures, as dangerous as it is beautiful, that threatens both their lives and their sanity.
Mm. Sounds like going on a date with me.
A threat to both a woman's life and sanity.
Yes. As deadly as I am beautiful.
Yeah. Well, Clay, some things you'll find in Annihilation include grief or possibly guilt painting.
Yes. Yeah, with some solid thematically relevant Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young music to go along with it.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever painted a room.
While sobbing.
I hope never to do that anyway.
Yeah.
But
seems like a good thing to try to avoid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gator mouth cam.
I was a big fan of the gator mouth cam.
I like the gator mouth cam.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun shot.
It's probably the silliest moment in an otherwise fairly serious movie.
Yeah, yeah. The old reverse the thing scene.
Yeah, this time you have three people who are definitely not crazy tied up by someone who definitely is crazy.
Yes.
Or infected, depending on how you look at
it. Yeah, we can debate it later. A skull bear that screams like a woman.
Mm-hmm. That is one moment from the movie that I very clearly remember. That freaked me out.
Yeah,
it's really good.
It's really, really well done. H.R. Giger Lichen. Lichen? Mm-hmm. Lichen.
Lichen. Lichen. Lichen. Lichen like the plant, right?
It's
not like the werewolf.
It's plant-like, but not a plant.
Nor is a werewolf.
It's definitely not a werewolf. I can at least confirm that.
Ooh, H.R. Giger werewolf. That would be pretty cool.
That'd be insane. That'd be great. Literal flower people.
Yep. No. Just hanging out. I don't know if
not hanging out. They're very rooted.
That's true. I wonder if those are practical. They must be because they were touching them, right? That would be a cool prop to take home.
Yeah,
Take two of those and put them in the front yard or something.
Yeah, if I could weave a plant in my garden into a human shape to freak everybody in the neighborhood out, I absolutely would.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Another beachside graveyard.
Yeah, we decided this does follow the loose theme of beachside graveyards we've been having in our past few movies. Yeah. I've been very impressed at how we have managed to thread loose themes across movies so far in the past few months.
Yeah, well, we had our mannequins segment
which
of the year
segued into beachside cemeteries,
and who knows where we'll go next.
Well, between this one and the next one that we're watching, weird. Transmutations is going to be the next. Well, I guess technically it's
kind of a common one in lots of horror movies. Though.
Well, wait till you see what happens in The End of Men.
Anyway. Can't wait. A contagious tattoo.
Yes. The tattoo is confounding to me.
We will talk about it. Preventing senescence by circumventing the Hayflick limit.
So I live with a biologist.
Do you live with the biologist, though?
I turned to her and I said, do you have any idea what that means? And she said no. So
perfect. A plus. And last but certainly not least, cosmic vomit.
Best kind. When you explode.
Yeah, to be fair, I'd rather it be that than human vomit. It's gross.
I mean, when you explode into cosmic dust from your deepest, most regions of your stomach.
Yeah.
There's worse ways to go.
Yeah.
She actually looked a lot like, I don't know if you ever watched Doctor Who, but she kind of looked like she was regenerating. That's kind of the same effect that they use. Although the doctor doesn't vomit his entire being up through his mouth, generally.
And then the companion has to fight their silvery doppelganger creature, right?
Well, honestly,
that's how
that probably
season of Doctor Who ends.
That probably has happened.
Okay.
Maybe not exactly how it happens here.
How many head wounds are delivered?
Ooh. Six. So, Annihilation, based on a book that you have in front of you.
Yes.
So, yeah, what's this movie about?
Are you asking me seriously, or are you just looking for a way in to start talking about this movie?
A little from column A, a little from column B. I will say, I going into this one originally, I was very excited because I did love Ex Machina, and the trailers for this looked really cool. And one of the things that I like about Alex Garland is I feel like he's one of the few writers and directors working at his level that is just really not afraid to get weird.
Yes.
And so when I saw the trailer, I was like, okay, this looks like it's going to get weird.
Yeah.
And it does.
Yes.
It gets pretty weird. And I like it. I don't know if I love it. Part of me kind of wishes it was even weirder. I always end up in this weird sort of middle ground with movies like this where I almost wish they would push it even further, abstract it even further, than try to kind of wrangle it. And I think this movie wrangles things thematically pretty well.
Yes.
And just lets everything else kind of speak for itself, which is nice. But yeah, I wonder if there's not like a weirder version of this. So I was reading a little bit about it, and it didn't occur to me until I was reading trivia and stuff that the story is fairly similar to H.P. Lovecraft's The Color Out of Space. That movie the movie they just made of that actually came out the same year as this. That movie gets pretty weird. And I'm not saying I wish it did that, but like, I don't know. I do really like this. It rides the line between, fairly routine science fiction about people with a bunch of guns going into an unknown area and abstract, cosmic, oneness or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me how you feel about it.
Well, your dog just tried to fully knock over my setup.
He doesn't. He is not interested in your opinion.
He has rolled over onto my leg. I really like this movie. This is at least the third time I've watched it, if not the fourth. Obviously, I am a huge fan of the book and the series. I'm going to try really hard to sort of... I will talk somewhat about the book, but I'm going to try really hard to talk about the movie as its own thing. Because I do think Alex Garland is trying to do something different with the movie than what the book does.
Well, what's one of the interesting things that I read, and I guess it's probably appropriate because you said you didn't have a chance to reread the entire thing.
Only halfway.
Well, that's more than he read before he made the movie.
Oh, really?
Because he said he specifically didn't want to reread the book before he made the movie because he wanted it to, he was kind of pulling from it. He said it's kind of like a remembered dream of the book.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. And I do that is something that I do kind of appreciate as an approach, because I think that does kind of free you up to let your own story kind of gestate.
Yeah.
When you're not a slave to the
yes
actual beat by beat elements of the book.
Yeah, you can find some threads to pull on that were maybe present in the source material, but either not handled in the same way or not expanded on in the same way.
And it also thematically works with the story itself, because he is in essence absorbing that story.
Yes.
And then
refracting it through
it into some a new thing.
Yeah. So very appropriate. One thing I will kind of get out of the way up front is that the book is written in the first person.
Oh, interesting.
So you get everything from the biologist's point of view, and in the book there are, I can't remember if you find out the psychologist's name in the first book, but there are no names.
Okay, that's interesting, because another thing I read was that all of the names are actually from like another movie. Like he lifted them from something else.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Or possibly maybe those are the names for, anyway, the names come from something else.
Yes, but in the book it's first person, there are no names. Mm-hmm. You get everything from the biologist character's point of view, and she is a very unreliable narrator.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And that is, you know, the Natalie Portman Lena character. They definitely smush some stuff from another character into her in the movie to make her more adept with weapons.
Interesting.
In the book, she's not. She was never a soldier. She's just straight up a biologist. But it makes it so that there's a lot of her, a lot of the, because the book is actually very short. It's less
than 200 pages. I was expecting a tome of a sci-fi novel.
No. They get longer as they go. There are now four books in this series. And none of them are like hugely long, actually.
Good, because I got a lot to do.
Yeah. But it makes it, I don't want to say it's an unadaptable book, because obviously here we are talking about the adaptation. But it would be really limiting to try and recreate exactly the tone and the way things are handled in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Because so much of it is about the biologist's interiority and her thinking through things and sort of her motivations and decision making. And I feel like that would make for a kind of a boring movie.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because you can't express that as easily.
Right, unless you talk to yourself.
Right.
Yes, which is... Right. Did you see The Martian?
Yes.
The Martian was kind of like that, where which I thought that movie worked pretty well. But,
yeah.
But yeah, for something like this, yes, I can see why you wouldn't want to go that way.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I actually did really like about this is... you know, I think audiences generally, well, used to anyway, deserve more credit for the stuff that they can take in and figure out.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, actually, I'm pretty sure, I know for a fact that one of the complaints that the studio has was they were like, well, no one's going to be able to follow this.
Mm.
And I actually thought all the time jumping stuff was pretty clean.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't find it hard to follow at all.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of like the narrative, like pathways.
Yeah. Like there's no, he doesn't put in any like indicators that they've changed time points or anything. It's all basically, you know, you kind of
You never get like a title card that's like 3 months earlier.
Yeah.
You don't need that. You can sort of follow that we're in the, for lack of a better way of phrasing it, the present day of Kane returning, and that setting off this whole chain of Lena ending up in Area X, and then we're jumping back to her with him before he left.
Well, even before that, the present that you start in is her getting debriefed.
Yes.
After she's returned.
Debriefed is a gentle way of putting it.
Yeah. Interrogated.
Yeah. The first time I saw this movie, I will admit I was kind of disappointed because I was
had you read the book at that point?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So I was, you know, such a fan of the book that I feel like I came away from this feeling like, well, they left out this and there wasn't this whole thing that's like the main motivation for the vast majority of the book isn't even in it. Mm-hmm. It's not even there. And I realized the more I've rewatched this, the more I've come to appreciate the movie for what it is mm-hmm. and what it stands on its own doing. Because I think the movie is much more about the sort of death drive that we all, you know, isn't it Freud who talks about the death drive?
Sure.
I think so.
Or possibly Master Blaster from Road Warrior.
It does sound a little bit like a David Lynch movie, the death drive. I think he thought about that a lot, actually, too.
Sorry, Master Blaster's from Thunderdome, not Road Warrior. Just want to make sure I get that right.
Before the hate mail starts pouring in. Yeah. But this movie, thematically to me, feels like it is really digging into that self-destructive tendency, mm-hmm. both in that how it occurs in nature and then how we manifest it socially amongst ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's present in the book, but not really the point.
Yeah.
And I feel like this the movie takes it and it much more narrows in on that way to approach this kind of strange place and these strange things that are happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think it's what I take away from it is definitely the self-destruction aspect of it, but it kind of seems very much like a metaphor for literally two people, a metaphor for literally Jesus Christ, Clay.
Fired
for two people who have changed and have grown apart, basically. Because, you know, at the end of the movie, however you want to take it, it's interesting because, like, I guess maybe the ending kind of undercuts this, what I'm talking about, because they are coming together as two different people or two different creations. But I guess you could say, like, well, at least on one level, now they understand each other better. Where because, you know, she's cheating on him with Dan.
Yeah, one of the other professors she's at Johns Hopkins.
I guess is something that has been going on for a while, even though he.
Yes.
And it's never really gotten into whether or not it's like because Kane has gone on missions all the time.
There's that one little flashback scene. I think there's two flashback scenes where you see Lena having sex with Dan. And in the second one, there's the sort of aftermath of their intercourse. Mm-hmm. When they're talking to one another.
That is the only way you can refer to post-affair sex is the aftermath.
Right? Like, it doesn't... Because there's nothing...
The fallout.
Yeah, even the sex that they're having isn't really sexy.
No, it's very weird and kind of sterile.
And even the way... I love the way it's shot, mm-hmm. because I don't think you ever see Lena's face during it.
No.
You see her back in the back of her head, and then it cuts to Dan laying flat on his back, unmoving, and you get his, like, profile, and then it's over. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no
what's weird
romance to it. There's no, like...
Seems like a pretty accurate description to me.
That sounds very sad.
That's just how everybody does it that way. That's how it works.
I am not gonna try and disabuse you of that notion.
Just saying.
But when they're talking about it, Dan says to her, you can't talk to Kane about your work, and he won't talk to you about his. Mm-hmm. And the implication is that she's so smart that Kane is not going to be able to keep up or understand or be interested in her work as a biologist. And he's working like special ops missions or whatever. And so he is, you know, she has the soldier experience, but he literally can't tell her about it. She doesn't have clearance or however you want to put it. And I think that's supposed to be like those two things have put a wedge in between them. You know, like the difference in their education and then the circumstances of his work.
Yeah.
And that's when she starts the affair with Dan because he's also in the biology department at Johns Hopkins.
Mm-hmm. That scene after where they talk afterwards, they really make Dan come off as an asshole very quickly and very effectively.
Yeah.
When he's like, when she's like, well, what about your wife? And he's like, she's innocent in all of this.
Yeah, I love my wife. She has nothing to do with this or whatever. Yeah, yeah, and she's like, an innocent in this. Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck?
But I love that because I know I'm nitpicking on the weirdest scenes to talk about in this movie.
Most normal scenes.
The most like normal human drama scenes, but I love them so much. And I think it's like kind of a key to why I really like a lot of Alex Garland's stuff is that he pays attention to these little things.
Sure.
The first time you meet Dan, really early in the movie, he seems super nice.
Yeah.
Right? Like, she runs into him in the hallway, and he's like, oh, hey, Lena, I've been looking for you. Like, we should grab lunch sometime. Like, oh, my wife and I are having a cookout. And she's like, no, I have to paint the bedroom. And he's like, well, it's not, you know, you're not betraying him by, like, it's been a year. You can live your life. And it seems like he's a supportive friend and colleague who's trying to, like, reach out to this very grief-stricken, closed-off person who's being kind of a jerk to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not until you find out much later that she obviously blames herself, but she also very much blames him.
Right.
For why her marriage starts falling apart.
Also, what kind of creepo invites, I mean, I guess there's a lot of stuff in this that are things that happen a lot in stories where people are like having affairs that work well dramatically, but I always just find are the creepiest things in the world. Like, when she's like, oh, my husband knows about this affair.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go sleep with the guy again anyway.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Self-destruction, yada, yada, yada. But like inviting the woman you're having an affair with to a cookout at your house with your wife and talking about it that way. Like it's
Please.
Just nothing.
Clearly you have not spent enough time on certain subreddits.
No.
Where people will talk about how they found out they did one of those DNA tests and they found out that their best family friend is actually their dad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That it's a very common thing. And I think Dan is very quickly and kind of neatly, and I mean like order, you know what I mean, like it's done in a very succinct and quick way. He's established as this sort of person who's going to intellectualize this kind of stuff.
Oh, definitely.
And say like, well, you know, like humans weren't evolved to be fully monogamous and we can't all be all things to one person, can't be all things to someone. So you know, you get your needs met with the people who fit in that part of your life.
The intelligent,
and then you go home to your wife who you love very much and your beautiful children and your beautiful house.
The intelligent thinking man's version of the Eddie Murphy bit where he talks about when you get caught having an affair and you just deny, and then finally you're like, okay, yes, I had sex with her, but I love you.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's also, I think, very much tied into the thematic thing of the self-destructive impulse, which I wonder, like, the more I think about it in this movie, I think it's kind of presented as part of a cycle, right? Like, not everything is always self-destruction all the time. It's the sort of, like, breaking down of the existing state in order to create a new one.
Sure.
So you're going through that, and it's I think it's very much symbolized by the fire at the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's burning everything down, but clearly it's not ending whatever the shimmer is. It's transforming it into a different form.
Mm.
There's a lot of that, of the sort of synthesizing of disparate parts into a new unified whole that will also eventually collapse and then transform into something else.
Yes. Thank you for joining us on Space Talk. Astronomy and
Get ready
theoretical physics podcast
for more cosmic space talk.
So we've got a Kane or some version of Kane coming home, and there's clearly something wrong with him.
Yes,
which drives Lena into the arms of Jennifer Jason Leigh.
the cold, unwelcoming arms,
cancer-ridden arms of Jennifer Jason Leigh. And they put their little team together and they head into the shimmer.
Yes.
Now, I read something on IMDb trivia, which I feel like is not something that was peer reviewed. Because I hadn't considered this. And
you're saying IMDb trivia isn't an academic source?
Yeah. I hadn't considered this. And when I read it, I was like, oh, that's interesting. But then I thought about it. I was like, I don't really know if that's what they're going for. Which is the idea that it kind of feeds into the tattoo thing, where the tattoo basically, you know how when they go into the shimmer,
yes,
it kind of goes to black and then it shows her waking up.
Yeah,
and then
they're all like, disoriented.
Yeah, do you remember anything? We've been here for like 5 days. Remember anything? And they're like, yeah. Oh no. This thing I was reading was postulating that is because the characters you are following from this point are total creations of the duplicates of the shimmer. And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And then like, you know, that's why they have the tattoo. But I was like, I don't really know if that the reason it started down this path was because it referred to the Kane who comes home as the third Kane.
Oh,
saying there's the Kane who goes in, there's the duplicate of Kane who's the one who catches himself on fire, and then there's the third version of Kane who then leaves. And I was like, I don't really know. Like, I mean, I guess you could get that literal if you wanted to, but I feel like it's not that simple. And the stuff that they're playing with as far as what the shimmer does and how it mixes with you and everything is a bit more complex than just, oh, we're watching clones here.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's an interesting like idea. It's an interesting kind of like thought experiment and lens to like look at this movie through, the whole idea that they're immediately, the original versions of all the characters are immediately obliterated as soon as they enter the shimmer. I don't think that's what's happening. I'm much more of the opinion that the characters we are following through the majority of the movie are the characters we start with in the process of being changed.
Yeah, that's much more interesting too.
Yeah, it's less of a hard cut of like, okay, now this is Lena 2, and all right, now that's Lena 3 or whatever. Like,
right,
I think it's, you can debate which Lena were, what number Lena were at the very end of the movie, but I think the majority of the movie is with OG Lena.
Yeah.
Do we want to jump into the tattoo? Do we want to get specific about the tattoo? It's Mayor's tattoo.
Who is that?
Wormguts.
Wormguts. It's specifically his tattoo?
In the timeline, he is the first person, if you put everything in chronological order, he is the first person with the tattoo.
Okay.
Anya is the second.
Okay.
And Lena is the third.
Okay. Why?
Because Mayor has become Lycan. By the time they've entered Area
X. But we don't even see a full moon once in this movie.
He has become a symbiotic organism made up of cyanobacteria or algae plus plant life.
Mold man.
And fungus. Yeah. Mold man. H.R. Giger, mold man. And
the design of mold man is like H.R. Giger if he finally started taking antidepressants. Because it's like, colorful.
What is everybody on now? Ketamine?
Ketamine? Yeah. Oh, God.
It's H.R. Giger on ketamine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the design for my next tattoo.
If you showed up with the mold man from Annihilation, on your back, I'd be
Do lightly have a very similar-ish
That's
thing on
true.
My leg.
Yeah.
With a skull and a bunch of plants. I think this is my theory. I think the implication is, because again, we're going back to all of my fun bullshit that I talked about when we covered In the Earth 1 million years ago about how fungal entities mimic almost like a neural network.
Sure.
Where they're all interconnected and these mats that they create can go on unseen underground and just kind of as part of the flora in the area for miles and miles and miles.
That's why every time I make a salad, my bathroom walls scream at me.
it's the fungus telling you not, don't do it.
Yeah.
Stop killing my friends.
Also, should probably clean my shower.
Yeah, you probably should. That's gross.
That's how Brittany Murphy died, you know.
Oh, Jesus.
I actually don't think that's true anyway.
I don't think that's true at all.
I think that's what they said originally. It's like, oh, black mold, that got her. And then they're like, oh, wait, is black mold, does that mean, is heroin? Is that what they mean?
Poor Brittany Murphy.
Yeah.
But I think that's part of it. I think it's the, once Meyer has been absorbed into this interconnected ecosystem, when the expedition we follow enters, they are all getting affected and infected by their environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the tattoo is a sign of, like, how much have you been absorbed into this?
Sure.
This entity, this area, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. I don't know if I like that.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's, I think the thing that bothers me about it is, it's too literal.
Mm.
At, like, if they had a tattoo that was an abstraction of that,
mm-hmm.
I think maybe that I would like that a bit more. Obviously, mm-hmm. it's a little bit harder to track that, but I don't know. I just, the idea that this, with the way everything else is evolving,
mm-hmm.
to have this very specific tattoo design,
yeah.
worm its way, literally or otherwise, in the exact same pattern, it's like, oh, okay.
See, I think it kind of goes hand in hand with the skull bear,
mm-hmm.
who literally rips a woman's throat out and then starts yelling in her voice.
The skull bear
that's
is
very,
like,
literal.
Yeah, but it's
eaten
not
your voice box, and now I literally have your voice.
It is, but it's not like a one. It's not like he's talking to them like her, right?
Isn't he?
It's become this guttural scream,
mm-hmm.
but it's not. Like even the way that the bear looks mm-hmm. is like this weird mix of, like, bear skull and, like, kind of something else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like I think the screaming, like, whatever her name is, Shelby, or I can't remember her name.
I think it's Cass.
Cassie. Screaming like her is still abstracted enough that it's kind of like one of those screaming goats. Where it's like, yeah, it sounds like a person, but, like, it kind of, I can kind of see where it's not, like, it's not, I just think having, maintaining the same ink pattern.
Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Seems a little bit much for me.
Yeah.
It's not really worth.
We can disagree on this.
but also, yeah, I don't know how I feel. I think if there was more than just the tattoo that mm-hmm. was maybe crossing person to person type thing,
yeah,
that might be a little bit more.
Well, I think what they're trying, what the movie does is it shows that happening in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it shows, you know, you get the crocodile that has the concentric rings of teeth, mm-hmm. like sharks do.
Mm-hmm.
You get the plants that are blooming flowers from totally different plants. But they're now on the same,
right.
They're growing out of this exact same vine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think they're trying to show via the environment that happening in different places. You know, I just think that, you know, the tattoo just being some sort of symbol of, like, ah, you're infected now, just generically, makes less sense to me than it is something that, you know, the whatever is kind of at the root of Area X has just started making copies of, because that's what it does.
Yeah.
It takes different pieces from different entities and it just kind of continually copies them in different forms. Almost like it's searching to see what works, like what pieces of this thing are beneficial and what pieces aren't.
It's also definitely something that, even though this would be, like, dramatically maybe kind of hacky, it's definitely something where in the real world, if that were to happen, someone would go, and why do I have this tattoo now?
Yeah.
Like, when what's her name is she's like, my fingerprints are weird and I got things under my skin,
under my hands.
She's never like, and I got this tattoo that I did not have when we came here.
That's a good point. I don't love the tattoo thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a clever bit of imagery for people who are looking for patterns and little signals that something has changed. But I don't necessarily think it was, you know, my favorite thing in this movie.
Yeah. I do. Once they get into the shimmer, I think it's very cool.
Yes.
I love the crocodile thing.
Yeah.
I think my favorite thing in the movie is probably the flower people.
Yeah.
Because that one is the most... It's the most disturbing on like a... I don't really know how to describe this. Mm. Like almost like a realistic level, because the stuff that it's sort of... the images that it kind of evokes for me is something like... you know, how they say in Hiroshima, after the bomb went off, there was just shadows of people on the wall. Or even something like Pompeii, where it's just these abstractions of people is the only thing that's left after this cataclysm. And it just kind of really has that element to it, even though these are things that have grown into this position. Mm-hmm. But even so, as what happens to Tessa Thompson, that's not entirely guaranteed that's what happened.
Right.
Like this could have been people who turned into these things.
Right. Their best hypothesis when they first see it is that like, oh, these plants have grown like this. But you're right. Then there's after Josie's sort of walk through the trees, it becomes like, well, wait, were they plants first or were they people first?
Yeah.
I think what sticks with me personally about that is that so many of the other fates in this movie are horrific.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a fate that seems less horrific.
Yeah.
And that little bit of like, well, if I had to pick, like,
sure.
You know, if you ignore Lena, of the other four women in the expedition, who do you want to end up like? Two of them get mauled to death by a bear.
That's true.
One of them explodes into cosmic vomit, and one of them sort of peacefully becomes a plant.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious about the cosmic vomit, personally, but
But you know what I mean? Like, there's something again to that sort of self. If we're going into that drive people have inside of them, you know, subconsciously or deep down for self annihilation,
mm-hmm.
there are worse ways to be self annihilated, right? Than to just become part of the ecosystem in this less conscious but still alive way.
Yeah. It reminded me a bit of some of the better, creepier things they've done on Doctor Who. Because the last... Jeez, how long has it been on since the new... like, the last... whatever the modern era of Doctor Who is.
Mm-hmm.
Does, like, these types of things very effectively.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, sort of... when they come across like graveyards, it's something kind of like, because it made me think, I was like, man, imagine if you could do that when you died.
Mm.
So instead of like a stone grave marker, the plants that were on using you as food grew into a like a person shaped thing.
Yeah.
That would be pretty wild.
Yeah. And there's something a little bit appealing about that in terms of a fate.
I could have one of those made.
Yeah.
And put on my grave.
Yeah. Someone would have to take care of it, though.
And then part of my will would say, people, you have to tell people that this grew.
Like organically on its own? Yeah.
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 That was a good idea.
You must maintain the clay plant.
Well, you know, they get caretakers.
If you want to inherit your podcast fortunes.
Yeah.
But I think those images, you know, it also like juxtaposes beautifully with the decay of the signs of humanity that used to live in the area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see those plant figures near these old houses that are falling apart. And then there's these like beautiful kind of plants growing in a physical body structure.
Yeah.
That's a really like cool image.
Yeah, I think that kind of stuff stuck with me, too, a little bit, because we were recently in Mexico City and went to see the pyramids down there and some of the other museums and stuff that have a lot of that vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially once you get into like the history of the Aztec stuff, and fuck, it's like, man, well, like the thing that stood out to me the most was when we went to that big square, which what is it called? The Plaza of the something. The big flat parking lot.
The Zocalo. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
And you find out it's like, oh, no, this is where the capital of the Aztec city
yeah,
was.
Yeah, the Templo Mayor.
And the Spanish just flattened it because they could.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know. I find
basilica on top of
yeah, it. Yeah. Using the bricks of the Tenochtitlan or whatever. Yeah. That kind of stuff really kind of gets to me a little bit because it's just this annihilation of such a vibrant life.
Yeah.
I don't know. We could talk about that for a while.
But did you go see the face knives?
The face knives.
In the museum. This is a tangent. In the museum down there by the Templo Mayor, that whole museum, there's a whole section where there are the Aztec ceremonial knives that have like faces.
They've got
eyeballs
those.
And little screaming mouths.
They put googly eyes on the
fucking
knives.
Fucking love those guys. Yeah.
The one that stood out to me as being pretty creepy was the skeletons of the people who had been sacrificed.
Fuck yeah.
Who had necklaces made out of teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the ones that weren't made out of teeth, but they were made out of like seashells carved to look like teeth.
Yeah.
So that's fun.
Got to have extra teeth for the afterlife.
Yeah. Lots of corn to eat, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, where were we? Yeah, I think they do a really great job visually with a lot of that stuff. And they do. I kept finding myself laughing every time Jennifer Jason Leigh was like, we should bunk here for the night. I'm like, you keep picking the scariest places.
Yeah.
We should set camp here in this house that had a mutant alligator inside of it.
To be fair, when she picks the house that they get attacked by the bear in, she wasn't expecting to get attacked by a bear.
That's fair.
You know, that one seemed like fairly normal.
Visually, this movie, I think, is incredible.
Yes.
I think all of the special effects look great, except one, which is the first bear attack. Because they're all hanging out at that little outpost, and what's-her-name goes walking, and then it's just like, rawr! Like, it's like a weird cut, and then this, like, bear just sort of, like, jumps in from the side.
Yeah.
It's not the cleanest looking effect.
No, I think darkness hides a lot
probably,
in that
yeah.
one. And then I think, you know, they're also trying to do the thing where you don't fully see it.
Yeah.
You know, like they're trying to keep some of it, I think, for the reveal later when you're getting it breathing probably extremely fetid breath right in their faces.
Yeah. It was pretty silly though.
Yeah, it is pretty silly.
That whole scene, I just kept thinking, why, especially Tessa Thompson. Why would you go all the way down there? Because they're in that like raised outpost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the lookout, like watchtower.
And Ventress has gone down to the grass to read or something.
No, she's on watch.
Yeah, but you could do that from up there. Like, why would you go down to the ground to go to on watch?
She doesn't give a fuck.
That's what I'm saying. Like, so instead of everybody walking down to go, hey, what's going on? I would be up there being like, I'm going to stay here.
Like, hey, what's going
on? We have guns. We can shoot a distance.
Yeah.
I would like to see what's going on.
Tessa Thompson's excuse, I think, is that they had given her a sleeping pill.
Yeah, she's all fucked up.
And she's all fucked up. And then they all go out. Like, they all go down. And I feel like if I were her, I'd also be like, well, I'm not going to be left alone.
That's fair.
Like, I'm going to be with the people who are better with guns.
So what are your thoughts on the rest of the team there?
I really like them. Mm-hmm. Not to say like, oh, they all seem so fun and great to hang out with, but I like that this is a movie where you've got this sort of all female central cast.
All scientists, you mean?
Well, no.
Sorry. That's the way they say it in the movie.
But I like that there's not a big deal made out of the fact that they're all women.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? They're just sort of allowed to be characters. Yeah. There's no like, I don't know. There are so many ways that could have been treated in a much more cliched manner. And instead, you know, they're just characters that you're following. They could honestly be any gender and it wouldn't change much.
Yeah.
But I like that they're all having different reactions to Area X and mm-hmm. to their circumstances in ways that I think make sense character-wise. You know, like the fact that Josie seems like the one who's the least assertive, and she is kind of the first one to be a little bit like, I don't want to be here anymore.
Is that like, Tessa Thompson?
Yes. Yeah.
It is interesting to see her in a role like that, because mm-hmm. usually she's a much more strong-willed character.
Yes.
Like, she's in Westworld, right?
Yes.
Yeah, she's pretty
assertive
in that. I mean, Valkyrie is obviously Valkyrie, and even in Creed, she's a very capable, confident, strong-willed character. So it's weird to see her playing someone so, like, demure, kind of.
But I think she does it really well.
No, she's great, yeah.
So I really like the team. I think it makes sense. I think people's reactions as things start to fall apart generally make sense with what you know of their characters. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things in the movie is that Lena really is a liar.
Mm.
Like, she lies all the time in small ways and big ways, but she lied to her husband. She lies to the team. Like, the fact that Anya starts to doubt her makes sense because she is hiding stuff. And so it makes Anya's sort of like, I'm losing my mind freak out, not totally nonsensical.
Sure. Yeah.
Which I appreciate, that it's not like it's come totally out of left field that Anya just hates Lena for some reason. And there's not any reason why she went mental and tied them all up at night.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why is she's kind of started to get that paranoia and they've started to clash, and then she finds proof.
Yeah.
She finds the locket and it pushes her over the edge.
She's also the most kind of the most destructive kind of liar, which is one who can make it sound like it's the truth or the right decision.
Yes.
Such as when she's like, oh, the best way for us to get out of here is actually to go deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ventress is like, you just fucking lied to them.
Well, it cuts to her debriefing.
Oh, that's right.
what's his name? Like Lomax or something. I forget the character. I think that's the character name. Says to her, so you lied to them.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, well, yeah. And that part of the character is actually very in keeping with the character in the book.
Mm.
Where it's like she has her own goals and her own motivations, and she is kind of willing to put herself and others in danger for them.
Yeah.
And whether that is a desire to know or a desire to find some way to save her husband or what, you don't necessarily know exactly what it is, but you do know she's whatever she's after, she's kind of willing to just kind of quietly manipulate people for it.
Mm. Why do you think Lena goes into the shimmer? Because she has that moment before they go where she basically goes to her dying husband and is like, you know, I need to do this or whatever.
Yeah.
What do you think her motivation is?
I think the motivation she thinks she has is that as a biologist, she's going to go in there and find that something has infected her husband and come out with samples where they can make a cure.
Mm-hmm.
I think her actual motivation is that she feels really fucking guilty.
Yeah.
I think she feels like he went on this mission because he found out she was cheating on him.
Mm-hmm.
And this is some kind of atonement. Like, if I go in there and it kills me, then that's what I deserved. If I go in there and I make it out, then I am absolved.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's my reading of it. But again, I have the background kind of from the book.
Sure, sure.
Which probably colors my interpretation a lot.
Yeah, I do. I do like. I do
Your
like
dog
that,
has just been dog napped.
Yeah. I do like that they never really get too in the weeds about that stuff.
Because
you get that scene that, like, all of these men on a mission type movies have, where it's usually when they're on a boat or something walking through the woods and they're like, so.
Yeah.
What are you here for?
And in this case, it's when they're paddling on the canoes. And I think Cassie gives the whole, here's everybody's baggage speech. And I don't love that.
Yeah.
Actually.
It's probably the weakest writing wise.
Yeah.
And
I know it's trying to humanize the characters. Oh, sure. So you care about them. So when bad shit starts happening in 5 minutes, you're upset.
Yeah.
But I don't really even think it's necessary.
But even there, she doesn't really get that deep into what her deal is, right?
No, because she's hiding from them that right. she's connected yeah, yeah. to Kane at all. So yeah. she's just like, my husband was in the military. He was killed in action.
Yeah. And yeah. so I do appreciate that there's no scene where, you know, she breaks down and she's like, but if I'm here, that means maybe I can find what did this to him.
Yeah.
And maybe then I can get some sort of redemption. You know, they don't ever right. do that. Like, she's a very internal character.
Yes.
For as much talking as she does, she never really talks about her true motivations for anything.
Yeah. Yeah. She plays everything very close to the vest. Yeah. Like, and I like that too. I like that she's sort of this woman on a mission, but you're not 100% sure what the mission is.
Right.
Just that she's very determined to do what she's going to do.
Also, I do find it hilarious that before they go in, they're all like, oh, just a bunch of scientists being sent into this thing. Mm-hmm. And then they're all given machine guns.
To be fair, I think this is supposed to be implied in the movie. It is outrightly stated in the book that the reason, like, when Lena meets them all out on that weird rooftop scene at the home base, they talk about how many months they've been there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I've been here for 10 months. Oh, I've been here for 8.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, it's that they're there for that much time in advance because they're getting training.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
they're
that
being
makes
taught
sense.
How to
yeah.
use the equipment. They're getting, you know, here's what we have for maps. Mm-hmm. Of the area that we've gotten so far. You have to memorize these. You have to learn how to determine which way is south by using your watch and the angle of the sun.
Sure.
Like, I think the implication is supposed to be like, no, we had training for this. We've been preparing for this expedition.
You know, it is funny because until they start, like, if you're not really paying attention to what they're saying, visually they do, from the minute you see them, present as military.
Yes.
Because, like, Anya, is that her name? Mm-hmm. I mean, when she goes to talk to Lena, she looks like Vasquez from
yes,
Aliens.
Yes, you know? She does. She reminds me a lot of that vibe, which yeah. I love.
And so, like, they definitely do read as military or military adjacent. So it doesn't feel that weird. It's not like four women in lab coats with M16s or something,
right.
you know?
right.
So I guess we should push on towards the end here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what the hell happens at the end of this movie?
Hell if I know.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see you guys later. Thanks
right,
for listening.
Bye. I mean, we sort of, you know, get the kind of classic horror movie, and then there was one, right?
Yeah,
like everybody gets picked off sort of one at a time, and then Ventress disappears, and you're left with just. Because isn't it like Cassie gets killed by the bear, Anya gets killed by the bear. Ventress fucks off on her own.
Mm-hmm.
And then Josie is like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
I'm going to go become a plant.
I will say, going back to the characters, mm-hmm. I do think Ventress is the weak link.
Yeah.
Characterization wise.
Yeah.
Because she's playing it even closer to the vest than Lena is.
Mm-hmm.
And the only bit of, for lack of a better term, explanation
mm-hmm.
you get about her is when they jumped back to the present and Wong is like, you know, she had cancer.
Right.
It's like,
she knew she wasn't coming back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. But like, you don't really get anything else from her or about her.
She is both a very similar and extremely different character in the book.
Oh, interesting.
We're talking about the movie, so I won't get super into it.
Mm-hmm.
But the way she is handled in the movie was one of the things that made me iffy on this movie at first.
Okay.
Because in the book she is she has much more of an effect on everyone, let me put it that way. Like, she's not just the de facto leader of the group. She has like actual power over people in a way, and her motivations are even more complex.
Okay.
And you learn more about her actual background in the book.
I do think that In a traditional movie with this kind of setup, she would be like the one who starts to go crazy,
mm-hmm.
like the leader who goes off the deep end,
yeah,
or who is it
in like Heart of Darkness? Is it Kurtz?
Oh, Colonel Kurtz. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But it's honestly the person who kind of fills that role is Lena, because where Ventress just sort of like drifts off.
Right. And Anya goes crazy, crazy.
Yeah. Lena is the one who is manipulating people into moving.
Who's like, seems like she's being responsible, she's not, but then you realize, oh, wait.
Yeah. The comparison I'm looking for is Ventress would be the Sam Neill in Event Horizon character.
Yes. Yes. You know? Yeah. 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 Well, so by the end, you know, once Josie has chosen to be vegetation rather than spend five more minutes with Lena, Lena's on her own, and she has kind of no choice but to follow the sort of prescribed path that they've been set, which is, you know, now you go to the lighthouse, right? And she thinks she's going to track down Ventress. I don't know at this point if she thinks she's going to track down more about Kane or what, but there's that great approach to the lighthouse, which I love, with these weird like crystal trees coming out of the sand, and you get what we're calling our beachside graveyard, but it's really kind of just like a bone monument.
I kept expecting them to do like a top-down shot and it would reveal that the bones spelled a word because they were
or at least were like a geometric shape or something.
They were placed in such a specific way that you kind of couldn't make out what the, like, it felt like it was going to tip up and it was going to say like Chiefs or something.
Ovaltine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we get Lena going into the lighthouse and descending instead of ascending.
Featuring one of my favorite things, which is the, I forgot to put this in the things you'll find, the literal threshold crossing.
Yes. Yes.
Always a big fan of that.
Yeah. But, but first we get our final update on what happened to Kane.
Yeah. I do love that once you go into the shimmer, compasses don't work. Radios don't work. Signals of any kind, fucked up, electronics, nothing. But video.
Yep.
Impeccable.
Yep. You got a mid-2000s camcorder and you're good to go.
Yeah. There was a lot of camcorders in this movie. Like, you go into the shimmer, you better bring a camera with you. And those videos are very cool.
Yes.
Like the one with the worms inside the guy's stomach is great.
That one's still, if you really sit and watch that video, like you put your phone down.
I do pretty much like once a night.
Once a night, yeah.
Before I go to bed.
But like I sort of, when we were watching it together, I sort of, you know, I'm taking notes at the same time, and you and I are chatting back and forth. So I kind of, you know, you're multitasking. You glossed over it. I was rewatching parts of the movie today before we got together to do this, and I really sat and made myself like watch that. It's still really fucked up.
Yeah,
like even
weird.
When you know what's happening, like just watching him carving with that knife through that man's flesh.
Yeah.
It's pretty fucking intense. It's pretty pretty effective for like not a super flashy scene.
Yeah.
And then when he peels it back and like the intestines are moving, when he sticks his hand underneath
the
one
part
of them,
that gets,
and it's like running over his hand, like he's in between them.
Yeah. The part that gets me is when he puts his hand in and the look on his face, which is like, isn't this weird?
Yeah. He's like, see, yeah. I told you it was happening.
Yeah, that part always gets me. But yeah, the video at the end is really good where he torches himself with the grenade. Mm-hmm. Although he's got an accent out of nowhere.
Yeah, it kind of fades in and out.
Yeah.
Like it happens earlier, but it's a little more subtle. And
it's a weird choice.
It is a weird choice. I don't know if they were trying to kind of put more of a specific pin geographically in where they were like living and where they were from.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have no idea.
I think in movies, if you're going to do an accent, you got to commit all the way. Otherwise, it's just going to be weird.
I also tend to think that there should be like a real reason why you're doing it. You know, like if we don't care where, if we know this guy's American and we don't care where in America he lives, then I kind of don't care about the accent that
much. Was weird enough. It stood out enough for me that I was like, is the accent something he's taken on? Like absorbed since he's been in the shimmer.
Oh, well, see, I had the opposite feeling where I was like, because we see a lot of post shimmer Kane, and I was like, wait a minute, does that version not have the accent? An original flavor Kane did have more of an accent. And then I kind of tried to rewatch and I was like, no, Yeah. It just kind of fades in. Like, he twangs a little on some words and then not at all on others.
Yeah, it's a weird choice.
Not quite all the way there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
that, yeah, that's, it's very heartbreaking. That scene where he self-immolates, like, it's oddly calm and peaceful. Like, once the grenade goes off, he doesn't scream. There's no, it's just like a burst of light and then he's gone. And then you get creepy
doppelganger.
Yeah. Doppelganger.
Yeah. You know, so watching that, I'm thinking, okay, knowing what comes next with the, mid-90s VR guy who shows up, steps out of
Jesus
the,
wept.
Who steps out of the Windows screensaver. Is the Kane doppelganger, is that a separate entity than this thing we see her with at the end? Or is it like part of the whole thing where it's like, yeah, it's separate, but everything's kind of connected and what's your read on all that?
I mean, my kind of initial assumption, could be very wrong, was that Kane also goes down into the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And when it gets a little sample of him, it spits out doppelganger.
Mm-hmm.
And then rather than fight it, Kane is just sort of like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. You do it. Like, I'm done. Because that seems to be, again, if we're thinking about the themes of sort of self-destruction or like the inherent death drive within nature, it seems like some people try to resist it with varying levels of success and mm-hmm. some people give into it. Like Josie gives into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Kane makes it further, but he also gives into it.
Mm.
And that seems to be, because his whole speech is, I thought I was a man. I had a wife, I had a home, now I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's lost his sense of self so much that he's just like completely lost the will to continue.
Yeah.
And I you know, I think the doppelganger probably breaks what's left of his psyche a little bit. And he this now feels like the only option.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like the sequence when she goes down into, H.R. Giger's basement there. When Ventress turns into the cosmic vomit, that is all very cool.
Yeah. I like in that scene where, like, when Ventress is cosmically vomiting, as we're calling it,
mm-hmm.
you start to see her body and her limbs sort of flatten and shrivel, like she's being
Judge Doom and Roger Rabbit.
Kind of, or like all of the like vitals, all the liquid is being sucked out of her and she almost becomes like a bog body
before
she fully disintegrates. So I like that detail. She doesn't explode or anything. It's much more of like a desiccation.
Yeah. Yeah. That whole sequence is really cool. And I think it's really smart that they don't try to really explain what's going on.
Yeah. fuck. Why would that
sequence, like once Ventress is gone,
mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any dialogue for the rest of that sequence where the Lena doppelganger shows up and then the fight sequence and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And,
when she fights the silver version of the Greendale human being.
Yes. Yeah. What do you make of, I guess, the final piece where she kills whatever that thing is and kind of destroys the shimmer and all that? I'm not really sure how to talk about the last few minutes.
It's really, it's fucking complicated.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we get the fight scene with the doppelganger as it's kind of gradually taking her form, and the whole challenge of that fight scene is that it's mirroring her,
right?
Which is obviously a huge theme throughout this whole thing, is kind of mirrors and light and refraction and that whole concept. It's mirroring her, so the more aggressive she is, the more aggressive it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I don't fully understand how she figures out how to get it to hold the thing while she steps away.
Right.
Like, yeah. It doesn't fully make sense to me. I know it's probably not supposed to be a very literal thing. But yeah, so she, you know, Lena seems to defeat her doppelganger, and then the whole lighthouse goes up in flames, and I think it taps into, like I was saying, that sort of like lichen or fungus where everything is a net and it's all connected.
The crystal trees burst in. The burning crystal trees is pretty fucking cool.
It's really cool visually, yeah. But I think the implication is supposed to be that this is such a tightly interwoven ecosystem that if you start this fire here, it's going to spread down these different filaments and start destroying other stuff. Because ultimately what happens is the shimmer itself, as a barrier between the normal world and this area, disappears. Mm-hmm. And I think in some ways it's supposed to sort of be like how certain ecosystems are designed for fire.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Like they're designed to every so often go through this cycle of, again, destruction.
Yeah, you go and you sweep the forest, like the president said.
Jesus Christ, I missed that one somehow. I can't. But yeah, that in a weird way, it is kind of like the start of a new cycle.
Yeah.
Like whatever this was has come to a conclusion and now something else is starting up, but it's in a different form. And that form is Lena.
Yeah. Yeah, that... How do you feel about the eventual reconnecting of her and Kane at the end? Because it's a little strange to me. Mm. Like, why do you think Kane all of a sudden gets better once the shimmer's been destroyed?
I mean, I can like guess. Yeah. My guess is as good as yours, though. What do you think?
I have no idea.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, maybe it is that connection of, If he's connected to the shimmer and it is some sort of organism, it makes me think about plants where like the pieces furthest out from the root system, mm-hmm. The plant has to work really hard to get energy and nutrients way out to those far away parts. And so if he gets too far away, it's almost like you're breaking that connection. And maybe that's why he's disintegrating. Whereas then if you destroy the huge section of the plant over there, but that little part's still there, well, now it's the only thing that's getting energy. And so it can take root and grow on its own and become a continuation of, it's like a new plant, but it's technically the same plant.
Yeah. That explains why that big morning glory plant that I had in my house, once I threw it out, the one petal that was left, tried to sleep with my wife afterwards.
Yeah. It'll do that. Morning glory is notorious for that.
Bunch of sluts. One thing I did want to mention just, cause I don't know, I find this stuff interesting is,
yeah, please. I feel like I've talked for the last hour and 15 minutes. Like this,
honestly, this is a movie where I don't know if I have much of a take on it, unfortunately.
Clearly, I have so much take.
No, I have
enough
more,
take for me, you, and
happy,
probably anyone who listens to
this. More than happy to just, you know, sit over here and smoke up while you're talking about lichen and shit. Miss Chlorophyll over here talking about God knows what. No, I was just... I noticed this. This is a tangent. Hello?
Hello?
Sorry, I lost my...
I lost you for a second, too.
This is a tangent that kind of doesn't have much to do with what we're talking about. But when I saw the most recent Mission Impossible...
Okay.
Stay with me.
All right.
The final action sequence of that movie is a fight...
Tom Cruise versus a Morning Glory van.
Yes. It's a fight on two biplanes. Right?
Okay.
Like, they actually shot for real.
Of course.
And it made me think about, it's really interesting how 100 years on in the history of film, we're still doing stunts and special effects that they did 100 years ago. Because, like, they were doing those kinds of actual daredevil flying things in the movies they were shooting back in. Like, I think there's a famous Howard Hughes movie that I can't remember that has a lot of that stuff in it. But that same thing popped into my head as I was watching this sequence with Lena and the shape, let's say, doing the mirroring thing. Because I was like, this is exactly, This is the high-tech 21st century version of the same gag the Marx Brothers did like 75 years ago.
Yeah.
In whichever movie where they the guy pretends to be the mirror.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's doing all the same moves. And I don't know. I just found that stuff funny. It's like, yeah, I mean, stuff just, certain things just work, and it's fun to see talking about an interconnected series of of whatever, something that was done in the earliest days of movie making still being done in a modern way now. But that's a completely different conversation.
I did just think of the fact, you still haven't seen Stalker, right?
I have not.
See,
I,
now that you've watched this, you have to go watch Stalker.
I was reading that this is kind of similar to Stalker.
Yes.
Did everybody also get cancer when they shot this movie?
I hope not.
Didn't that happen in Stalker? Isn't that one of those movies where
that's
like they shot
they were
it
like
the,
actually shooting
right,
in like areas. I think this was shot in like the
It's the same way
the
John
UK.
Wayne died, actually. Thankfully. Yeah. Sorry, that was mean. I think the end sequence is one of those where I could very much see, apparently the first test screenings of this did not go well. And the studio was not happy because I think a lot of people didn't know what the hell they just watched. But thankfully the producer, Scott Rudin, had Final Cut, and he basically said to Alex Garland, don't change anything.
Yeah.
And I really do appreciate that, because this is the kind of ending where I could very easily see people going like, well, clearly they didn't know what was going, like, this is just a bunch of silly garbage at the end. And the way that it ends with the two of them kind of having, I mean, they're both clearly changed from the shimmer. And then it just sort of ends at that moment. I think you could read that into being like, oh, well, they didn't know how to end this movie. And but I do think it is an interesting ending.
Yeah, I like it more than, I like leaving it kind of open-ended.
Yeah.
Like that more than if they had been like, oh, she comes back and he remembers their marriage.
Yeah,
and now they're back in love and everything's great.
Yeah.
Or she comes out and she doesn't know who he is now. Like, I'm glad they didn't do one of those, because then that would also equally be like, wait, what? Why did it work like that?
Yeah, I think thematically I find it pretty satisfying, because it does kind of read to me like, having, now that they have both changed, only now do they actually understand each other. You know?
Right, or even if maybe understanding is too human of a term, but it's put them back in connection with one another, right? Like, by the time we encounter them, their marriage has been irreparably damaged, and their relationship is kind of, whether or not they want to admit it, it's kind of over.
Right.
And this is sort of the only possible avenue of them kind of finding a new common ground.
That, like, that's the thing, though. I don't read this as the two of them like reconciling or anything.
Right.
But it feels,
it's not
to
like
me,
we're back in love or whatever. Right. But it is kind of like, okay, we're in this together now. Whatever this is, like, we're the two in hospital jumpsuits being zipped into the clean room while everyone else wears contamination gear.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we round it up?
I could talk about this movie for another hour, so we should probably
I can leave if you want to just keep going.
Me monologue. You put your dog in here so I can look at a face.
I'll go make a sandwich.
Okay.
the only other thing I was going to say is the composer on this movie is a guy named Ben Salisbury.
Good name.
Who has done all of Alex Garland's movies up to this point. He's done Civil War. He did Men. He did the show Devs that Garland did. Did you watch that?
I still need to watch that.
Yeah, I feel like I should just because. But he did Annihilation, and he also did Ex Machina, I believe. Yeah, it's in there somewhere. It's the soundtrack for this one is one where I only really started to notice it towards the end of the movie. Because the music also starts to abstract as the visuals do. And I kind of want to, I think I might sit down and like listen to it while I'm working or something.
Because
it seems like it's a pretty solid one.
Yeah, I like the moments it sort of kind of comes in and comes into your awareness, it starts usually very like slow and kind of gently, and then mm-hmm. then amps up a little bit as we, you know, and a lot of it's when there's these shots of sort of Area X in the environment and all of that. I really like it.
Mm-hmm. As someone who's read the book
yes.
1.5 times, do you find this to be a good adaptation? Do you like the sort of half-remembered dream approach that Alex Garland took, or would you have preferred something a little bit more one-to-one?
You know, I think over time I've come around to this approach more.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you had asked me when this movie came out, I would have been like, no, I'd like something more one-to-one.
Yeah.
But I do think that it's a really difficult style of novel to adapt.
Mm.
And I think that it's the kind of thing where if you tried to do an exact beat for beat adaptation, it's gonna fall short. It's gonna feel weird. It's gonna feel like something's missing or things aren't clicking, or you know what I mean? It's just yeah. never gonna quite be
excuse me.
What you want it to be. So I think I've come to appreciate this way of handling at least this type of material more,
yeah.
where it is like a reinterpretation rather than a straight redo.
Have you read any of the other books?
Yes.
Are they good?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like, I like his writing in general. So.
Do you ever get to the bottom of what the heck's going on here?
Every time you kind of do, other shit happens.
Okay.
It's thematically kind of part of the point is that
sure.
there are things that are unknowable and you're just never going to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do always find it interesting when they change the point of view
mm-hmm.
for these adaptations. Like, I honestly don't know if you could have done this movie from, I mean, I guess it's from Lena's point of view as much as anything could be,
mm-hmm.
but not quite the same way as a book would be.
Right.
One that I came across that did that not too long ago was I read Barry Lyndon.
Hmm.
Which is all told in the first person.
Oh.
And the movie, Barry Lyndon, very much not so.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting about it is, in the movie, obviously, you know, Redmond Barry's a piece of shit. He's still a piece of shit in the book, but he's also kind of an unreliable narrator, too.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll tell a story about some way that he fucked people over and ended up getting the shit kicked out of him. But afterwards, he'll be like, but of course, they all thought I was the utmost gentleman of the realm. Like he talks himself up, even though he's talking about the stupid shit that he's done.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a fan of unreliable narrators.
Same.
I think I'd be curious to see how something like this would play nowadays. I say nowadays as though this was made 35 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just like, I feel like, I don't know if it's, and this is another thing we could talk about for an hour probably, but I don't know if it's the internet or like the era of reading about stuff. And what am I trying to say?
I don't know.
What I'm trying to say is I don't think unreliable narrators are something a lot of people like in their media.
Because we feel like we get so much of it in our supposedly nonfiction lives.
I think people are too literal about a lot of stuff now.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the things they watch or consume, I feel like they have to have, it's the reason why all of these YouTube channels are like, well, this is what actually happened at the end of X.
Mm.
You know, I don't know. I think it's difficult for a lot of people now to jive with the idea that not everything that they've just consumed was true and or right. I don't know. It's
yeah,
just,
I mean, I think
I haven't
like,
really composed my thoughts about this. But.
Yeah, I do think we all have that sort of natural inclination of we want to know, right? Like mm-hmm. we want to know what the answer is.
Yeah.
You know, like you're going to ask me what the hell happened at the end of this movie.
What the hell happened at the end of this movie?
And I can give my thoughts on it, but you know, I think the beauty of a movie like this is that somebody could listen to this podcast episode and be like, Amanda was completely wrong. Mm-hmm. I barely even know what movie she watched. I have a totally different read on it. And it could be...
That's why I didn't say a lot, because I was just watching you hang yourself.
Good. Great. Yeah. No, really. Like, I
gotcha.
I wish we kind of had a little bit more room in our media diets for stuff like this, mm-hmm. that allows for that feeling of like, I don't know, here's my interpretation, but someone else's can be equally, if not more valid. Yeah. And it's all kind of open to what you see in it.
It is why I find it to be not a small miracle that David Lynch was as beloved as he was,
mm-hmm.
because if there was ever someone who made stuff that was basically just up to the as famously stated by Mike, the One-Armed Man,
mm-hmm.
It means like it means what it is, like it sounds.
Yeah, yeah.
Which in and of itself means nothing,
right?
But also means everything,
right? But weirdly. Like, what is the meme that everybody loves of David Lynch? It's like somebody asks him, "Say more about that," and he just says, "No."
Yeah. But, you know, like, his stuff is whatever it was about his stuff, mm-hmm. that tapped into this weird part of your brain that lets you kind of, I don't know, dream in the same way he mm-hmm. is. I feel like a lot of other people people don't have time for that, yeah. a lot of other places. But for some reason, his, yeah. stuff just hit the right chord. But
yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, that's a conversation for another day. But yeah, I think that's going to do it for Annihilation. I guess. Yeah.
Did you just annihilate all your thoughts?
I'm just, you know, thinking about that bear with the lady's voice.
Drawing little hearts around it.
We are going to, for our next movie, mm-hmm. we are going to pull the wild card, and we are going to do Alex Garland's Men.
Yay.
Which is another one where I am probably going to just let you talk for the whole thing.
Oh boy.
Because
I'm going to have I don't know if I'm, I haven't seen this one and I have no background material to read.
I am really curious. We're basically doing this just because I want to know what you think of this movie.
Okay.
Because I saw it in the theater. I feel like I was one of like 8 people who saw it in the theater when it came out. And yeah, I walked out going like, that was okay. Let's guys, he's playing a game I'm not entirely sure I know the rules to on this one, but
all right.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to chatting about that one.
Cool.
But this is number 135, I believe I said, on our list.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about the placement? Do you think it belongs on the list at all?
I do think it belongs on the list.
Yeah.
I think there's enough of the cosmic horror element in there.
Do you think this is a horror movie, more of a sci-fi movie?
I think it's more of a horror movie.
Interesting. Okay.
I think if they went more into the origins of Area X and more into like, you know, it's an alien life form and we need to fight against it and we're mm-hmm. going to contain it or trap it, you know, like if it was more focused on that end of it, then I would feel like it's more sci-fi. But I feel like those elements sort of quickly fade into the background as mm-hmm. you're watching this. You know, you sort of get in the very opening of the movie, this little almost just scene of a comet or something crashing into the lighthouse.
Mm.
And then you get, you know, when Lena's in the basement of the lighthouse. And that's pretty much it. That's like as alien as it gets. Like everything else is, you're very concerned with what's in front of you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I don't know if I would put this on the list.
Fair.
I think it's good. I don't know if I would consider it a horror movie.
Yeah.
I think I would go more sci-fi than horror. It definitely has horror elements to it,
mm.
but there is a lot of science going on throughout it.
True.
And at its core, it does feel more of a sci-. I mean, it's I don't know. It depends on. Obviously the overlap between these two things is so like the mm-hmm. Venn diagram is
yeah.
a big overlap because
yeah,
like
yeah.
is this really, like I said, it's similar to Color Out of Space,
mm-hmm.
which you could also argue is a sci-fi story.
Mm-hmm.
Is it really that much different than like Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
Right.
Or as I was saying last night, we were talking, The end of this is kind of, in a weird way, similar to Possession.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you've got the two new versions of the characters who are, but yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Watch Possession. Did I send you that thing about the person who said the new summer trend is possessioning?
Yes.
Where you go into
a subway station and just start rolling around. Absolute freak out. Yeah, I love it.
That's a TikTok trend I would get. Could get behind. But yeah, so I don't know. I think I would err on the side of sci-fi.
Sure.
But hey, listeners, let us know what you think.
Yes, please.
Please do, because it's, you know, it's lonely out here.
In space.
In the shimmer. but that's going to do it for Annihilation. Yes. Thank you guys for listening. If you want to help support us, head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile, where Amanda and I are covering reboots and remakes this year. And as I said earlier, we're going to be doing this month is Fright Night.
Say it right.
Fright Night.
Better.
Which is a lot of fun. I haven't watched it in a while, but that's one I saw in the theater. I was like, that was pretty good.
I'm looking forward to that one.
But yeah, thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Amanda.
Thanks, Clay.
See you next time.
Hi, everyone.